Welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. My name is Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr as SF in Color.
And today we're talking about Ghostbusters, the 2016 movie. Let me look at the cast list real quick,
because I can't remember all the names. Melissa McCarthy, Kay McKinnon, and Leslie Jones make up the main cast.
You're good. You also watch SNL way more than I do, so.
I used to be a regular SNL watcher. In the last few years, I've kind of faded away a little bit. I don't think the writing is as good as it used to be, but I think a lot of the people on the show are really funny. So.
Oh, yeah. Isn't their casting progress, like, really vigorous?
Yeah, it is, definitely. And they still end up with people that they're not, like, thrilled with. I mean, there's definitely a revolving door at SNL. And, you know, sometimes, you know, your favorite person leaves and you don't even know why, and they've been there for years, and it just leads to not nice feelings, honestly.
You mean, like, there's, like, drama with SNL alumni and stuff?
With some of the hiring and firing process, I think it's kind of ambiguous, and why some people get kicked off for it just doesn't really make any sense, in my opinion.
That's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, but, you know, it has its moments, and during election years, it's always more relevant, so I have been watching a lot of the political stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, I know. I've been watching more, like, that's really, I guess, like, same, like, that's really the only time I really get really into SNL is, like, around, like, election years, and then I'll start watching, because they usually have pretty good material, and Kate McKinnon, like, freaking killed it.
Kate McKinnon as Hillary. Hilarious. She's
Kate
hilarious.
McKinnon
in, like,
is a national
sketch.
Treasure. Like, she's awesome.
Oh, speaking of which, and this is sort of relevant. So last night there wasn't a new episode of SNL. And Kate McKinnon is now playing Kellyanne Conway.
She has been playing Kellyanne Conway.
So last night's sketch was absolutely hilarious. It was phenomenal, and I'll link to it in the show notes. And I'll send it to you, Maggie. But I don't even want to tell you about it because it will spoil it. But you'll watch it and you'll understand why I enjoyed it so much. Let's move on.
Okay. I did watch bits of it. Sorry, I know we're going to be talking about Ghostbusters. I just was, like, wanted to get in like into, like, kind of background stuff. But I did watch parts of yesterday's sketch. I think I watched Aziz Ansari's intro.
It was really good.
And I also watched, I literally just before we started recording this, just watched Leslie Jones, like, I guess it was, like, some kind of news update thing. It was about Hidden Figures and things like that.
Oh, yeah. I saw that on my YouTube feed, but I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. Because I was like, oh, I'm going to watch Ghostbusters today. And, oh my gosh, Leslie Jones was on SNL last night. So let me watch, like, both things. And I was like, yeah, Leslie Jones is pretty awesome.
I think.
I want to. I mean, I've only seen her. Yeah, I want to see more of her stuff. I mean.
I can say
like,
stuff anyway. I mean, I can send you.
I mean,
stuff.
I want to watch more of her SNL stuff because I think this was the first time I had seen her on SNL, or the first time I had seen her ever in anything.
Yeah, I think she's. Well, I think all of the women in the movie were really funny. I also.
Oh yeah, the four leads were great.
I also.
Hemsworth also had his moments too, which was interesting. Hemsworth also had his moments.
Oh yeah, I did not realize how funny he was. He was. Great.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, this is like a. I think this was his way of, like, trying to not be typecast as a certain character.
Yeah, because he, you know.
But I think it worked because he proved himself.
He was hilarious. He was so, like, deadpan. It was just, glorious. Yeah.
It's always, I mean, I'm always a fan of getting to hear him with his Australian accent.
Oh, yeah.
And I do think Hemsworth is, like, I don't know. He just did a good job. But, yeah, overall, how did you feel about this movie?
I really, really, really liked it. Like, I liked it a lot. I should preface this. I have never... Well, that's not true. I sat down to watch the original Ghostbusters when I was really young with, you know, my mom and my sister. And, you know, my mom loved the movie, and so she wanted to show us. Both of us were really bored, honestly, and I probably got through maybe an hour, and then I just.
How young were you?
Probably 10.
Okay, so it's like
I'm old enough that I should have been engaged, honestly, and so. Right. I don't know if that takes away from my nerd cred, but...
Well, you've at least seen it. I've never seen the old Ghostbusters.
But I just kept thinking, I mean, maybe it's because this is a recent version and a lot of the jokes are more relevant to me and I understand everything better. But I also think there is something to be said for representation. And we can get into that as well. But, you know, this is a all-female reboot.
Yeah, dude. And I mean, I don't want to get too into this side of things, but yeah. I liked the film. I liked it more than I thought I would, but I'm also wondering if my personal feelings are kind of amplified because I was at a march yesterday. So,
where were you?
Y'all
marching?
Know we're releasing this episode today, January 22nd. So, yeah, I was at a women's march in Boston. So, yeah, like, maybe my feelings from yesterday have carried over into, like, my viewing of... No, hold on, not say maybe. My feelings from yesterday have definitely carried over to my feelings and reactions in watching Ghostbusters today. But I kind of, like, liked it almost. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, I'm like, definitely viewing this film from a very, like, interesting perspective. Whereas if I had seen it... If I had seen the new Ghostbusters back in, like, July or something, I think I would have been in a different headspace and I would have reacted differently. So, I mean, that's not really something we talk about that much, like, how, like, external stuff is going to affect how we view films, but, like...
No, you're definitely right.
That was cool.
I mean, let's be real here. Like, but leading up to the movie's release, there was so much negativity online regarding
this.
And, you know, the trailer on YouTube was one of the most disliked videos in YouTube history. And so, like, me going into this film, I had to love it because I wanted to spite the people who thought it was going to be bad regardless. Now, that doesn't take away from the fact that I legitimately liked it. I was legitimately
I don't know if I went in with that mindset where I was like... I remember I had seen the trailer when a little bit after it had come out. When did it even come out? Like, spring of 2016 or something?
Yeah, somewhere around then.
Something like that. I had seen the trailer when it came out. And I was like, oh, I should go see this. And then I was like, oh, I really should go see this because I know, like, people are making a big hullabaloo over the leads being females or something.
Right.
But then I had moved, so then those plans were dropped, so I never did actually end up seeing it. And I feel kind of bad because I did some... I looked up Ghostbusters on Wikipedia after I watched it today. And it was saying how it was, like, a box office bomb. And I was like, oh, man, I should have, like, you know, seen it in theaters to support it and stuff. But, I don't know, maybe I'll buy the DVD or something. We'll see.
It was released in July.
Yes, yes.
The box office was $230 million. And the budget was $144, so I wouldn't call that
right, it
bomb.
Right, it did break even. It's not like it, or more. I mean, it did make a profit, but it was considered a bomb. I don't know if that's because they invested a lot of marketing that didn't really pay off or something like that, or they just had higher...
I don't know.
They expected higher projection for profit, but it was considered a bomb, unless Wikipedia is lying to me, which, you know, maybe it is. But, yeah, it's very much, like, from the get-go, a very, like, feminist, like, woman power, empowerment type film from the very beginning. And again, just coming out of yesterday, I'm just kind of like, woo, like, yay. But yeah, I mean, honestly, overall, I really did like the movie. I thought it was solid. It's a conventional Hollywood flick. It's nothing's too, like, artsy or out there or experimental. I mean, we start with, like, establishing shots of New York City, like, all over the place, right?
Oh, yeah, there's so many.
So many.
But, like, I don't mind.
But, yeah, I mean, like, so, like, I was just thinking about how, you know, how I see, because I've recently seen some more, like, artsy films, so just kind of how I perceive those two things differently. But anyway, yeah, I like the film. I think I have some critiques of certain things in it, but, you know, overall, I liked it. And just, again, thinking back, I was in Boston yesterday, and apparently they filmed a lot of Ghostbusters in Boston. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
I did not realize that, but that's what it said on Wikipedia, and I'm choosing to believe it because I don't know why they would lie about that. So, yeah, that's kind of
Wikipedia is often cool. So malicious.
I know.
It lies all the time. That's what old people think.
This is the age we live in where we can't trust Jack. So,
who's Jack?
Anyway, let's get to hey. I'm trying not to curse, okay, Melissa? Okay. So let's start from the beginning, I guess.
That's a very good place to start. When did
you watch this? I literally just finished watching it. When did you watch this?
I watched it on Friday. Two days ago.
So it's not that.
No. It's still pretty fresh for me.
Pretty fresh. Okay.
And it was just good.
Yeah.
Let's end the podcast now. It was good. Good job.
Well, no. Let's get into it, though.
I'm kidding.
So... Like, the opening, we have them at some kind of ancient mansion, tour guide.
I'm going to call it an ancient mansion.
Sorry, not an ancient mansion.
That's like a tomb,
historic
like
mansion,
the
whatever. They're at a mansion in New York City, and, you know, this guy's telling ghost stories and blah, blah, blah.
I loved that guy.
He was great. I also really liked the set. Like, the set was great. When the door is like kind of rattling, like I just love how like the doorknob had all this intricate stuff on it, like that just drew your eye in even more. Like the visuals were good in this. I really loved like the crazy lighting too. So like once the tour guide is like shut inside, and he's like kind of hanging off of like,
yeah, that ledge,
that ledge
like a top,
and like the
stair.
Light the blue light is just like hitting, like there's just that blue light on his face. I was like, oh man, this is like giving me major, like, I don't know, like old school horror vibes in a way. I mean, I know like Ghostbusters isn't like really horror, but like still, like I talk about like a lot of the same films on this podcast, but like I may have talked about Suspiria. I think that was a while ago. But yeah, like all this like crazy colorful lighting for horror films. Like I like that throwback. It was kind of like, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to say because I haven't seen the original Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if they also made use of that same kind of like crazy colorful lighting scheme for stuff.
There were a lot of similarities, to the original. I was just kind of reading on some of those to kind of refresh my own memory, but like, you know, there are a lot of throwbacks, but
oh yeah, I noticed them. Yeah. I mean, even though I haven't seen the old film, like I'm aware of some of the cultural like touchstones and things, like this, like with the, what is his name, Stay Puffed Man, is that what it's called, whatever, the puffy guy who like the balloon that fell on them.
Yeah.
And then like, was it ectoplasm or
something like
whatever, the green slimer.
Yeah.
I don't know their names because I haven't seen it, but like I like visually I'm like, oh yeah, there's that weird marshmallow looking guy, there's that green guy that was on the high C thing, and like, you know,
right. I mean, it really speaks to the, you know, the cultural relevance of the original.
Cultural osmosis.
Yes.
Yeah.
How do I know so much stuff about stuff I don't know?
Yeah, basically. Basically, yo, one day We really should do the 2009 Star Trek movie.
That'd be fun. Like,
because, dude, my first experience of that, so much cultural osmosis. So much. You know, we could have done that this week. Okay, whatever. Maybe we'll save that for, like, in a couple weeks. We'll do, like, the old Star Trek. They did mention Captain Kirk in this film. So I was like, yes.
Did they?
Because her character's name is Patty.
Yeah.
Patty calls Rowan, like, he says that Rowan was wearing, like, a Captain Kirk outfit or something. Because he had that red bellhop maintenance man hotel thing on. Anyway, getting off track. But, yeah, I definitely noticed all, like, those throwbacks, kind of like, oh, Patty's uncle is that guy from the old movie, and
yeah, there was
Bill
lots
Murray's
of
in here, and etc.
Stuff like that.
Yeah,
it was good. It was.
And Sigourney Weaver was in the beginning and the end, and I was like, I didn't realize she was a cameo in the beginning. I don't even think I recognized her in the beginning, and then when she came back, I was like, oh wait, she's clearly a cameo, because there's no reason for her to come back.
Right.
And also, wait, is this Sigourney Weaver? Mad random. So it took me a while to realize who she was.
It wasn't...
Anyway, what about you? What are your thoughts about the beginning?
Well, I would just say for the... all of the references to the original, it wasn't too much for me. And, like...
Yeah.
I mean, the comparison I kept making was The Amazing Spider-Man, and the comparison to Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. Mm-hmm. And the two movies are extremely similar.
Okay.
You know, even though they are setting up different franchises, they're using the kind of the same premise, and unfortunately they're using the same character and all of the same plot points and literally basically the same thing. And okay,
was Gwen Stacy in the Amazing Spider-Man?
She was in
movies?
The Amazing Spider-Man. She was in the third Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire, I believe.
Oh, okay.
But
honest to God, I did not even know Gwen Stacy was a character in the Spider-Man universe until like the past couple of years.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
like she was never
player.
Mentioned in any of the 90s and early 2000s TV shows or or at least I never noticed her.
I think she was,
and all of a sudden it's like, oh, Gwen Stacy. It's like
she was
okay.
In the comics, but we've gone.
No, yeah, she was in the original comics way back when. But like, I guess since like her death was really, spoiler alert, her death was like really like whatever.
Traumatic.
They were like, oh, let's never talk about this ever again.
Anyway, the point is that the Amazing Spider-Man had to reinvent the wheel essentially, and that never really works.
Yeah, but
you have to,
and even this one with it being a reboot, you know,
so like
so many reboots.
Yeah, I mean, I wish there were more original movies, honestly, but I can't really complain about this one too much because it did take the original and it did flip it on its head enough that I was satisfied.
I was gonna say the same thing. I was gonna say turn it on its head or something. Like
yeah.
It's like you read my mind.
It didn't reinvent it. It, you know, it flipped it enough.
Yeah,
and not
like,
just,
I think,
you know, the
it was a
thing.
Successful reboot.
Yeah, I would say
I would
so.
Say.
I'd love to see a sequel, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, they did have a hook at the end, I think. I don't know if you caught it. I was like, because I watched the post-credits, or like the pre-credits. There's like, I guess it was a pre-credit sequence, and then they have like the Kevin dance number thing. And then at the very end, there's another,
I don't think I got another thing.
I watched it. It wasn't. I think it was a callback to like some villain from like the old or the original movie or something. It was like something about Zool. But anyway, so I think that was supposed to be their maybe hook for the next movie. In any case.
But I mean, I don't know. The other comparison I kept making was when they remade Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay.
Because that's another kind of, you know, reimagining of, well, in this case, it's the reimagining of the book, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by Roald Dahl. And it was similar, but it was different. And, I mean, it's hard, right? Because the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory movie, I watched so many times growing up. It was one of my, like, staple movies. Whenever I was sick, I would put it on. And, you know, when I went to see the Johnny Depp Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in theaters, I mean, how could that movie hold up to childhood memories and nostalgia, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I appreciate that movie and I like it, and they took a very different approach, and so...
The 2005 one?
One, yeah.
Right.
But it's hard to hit you in the feels in the same place twice.
Right. So, you know, that I think that also contributed to people being like, well, I don't want to see it because I know the original always have this place in my heart and I don't really care for any new rehashings of it or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that it was reimagined with new characters, like, I think it's safest to think of this movie as completely separate. And, yes, there are some cameos, but if you think of it as just, like, more of a separate entity, I think... You know, people would enjoy
it. Right, because it's not like this movie takes place in the same universe as the original Ghostbusters. Right. Yeah, so, yeah, I would think of it separately. sorry, when you mentioned Roald Dahl, like, I love his books. Me too. I read like most of his books.
Same.
When I was a kid, and they were so good. Ugh. And it's, I just think, like, we're in this like weird postmodern world, and also like very profit driven world, where it's like, well, first of all, like, making copies of copies and simulacrum and all that English major BS, I'm gonna put out there. So it's like, yeah, it's like really weird that we keep remaking the same stuff over and over again. Like, I feel it's kind of a little postmodern to me. It's a tad. But yeah, there's also like the whole profit thing, right? Like, Hollywood is scared of original material because they don't know if it's going to do well or flop. So
yeah,
they rely on these pre-established fan bases and franchises to get their money.
It's so sad.
But yeah, even then, that doesn't always work, right? Because then there was all this weird backlash for Ghostbusters, and then it ended up not making as much money as they wanted.
Right.
So,
I mean,
who's to say?
Think of the movie Battleship. I mean, how sad is that? I mean, that's obviously not like a reboot.
Yeah, all I know about Battleship is like, I saw the ads, I know Rihanna was in it.
That's what I know, too.
It's literally all I know. It's based off of a freaking, like, game.
But that's the thing, though. Like, they're looking for that name recognition.
Right.
It's obviously
not. I was thinking that, you know, like, oh, they put Hemsworth in here because name recognition, right? And then they have the cameos and such.
Mm, and such. So. But yeah, back to the beginning of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, what did you think of the beginning?
I thought it really established everything really well. It established the tone. It, like, the guy, like, the tour guide was hilarious. And he just was, I don't remember exactly any of the lines he said, but it was saying, like, he was just making stuff up. Because
oh, yeah, it was like, ridiculous. What was like, oh, this is the room where P.T. Barnum thought of the idea of enslaving elephants, and there was another line about, like, what was the other, like, that was the second line. The first line was something about, I don't even remember, man.
It was, but I just kind so of liked, good.
It was good, and I also kind of like how it set that feminist kind of tone, honestly. Maybe I was just looking for it because yesterday,
no,
but,
I don't
like,
think so.
It was very, like, oh, okay. Let's talk about times where men have been really disingenuous and messed up.
Yeah.
And I also liked how when we first meet Erin, it's like all these men are like policing what she's wearing.
Yes.
And I was like, yes. like more like, okay, cool. Like, I'm glad that they're addressing all this. It almost felt like, I don't know if they were like editing or like recording B-roll or more takes while the whole like, oh, let's boycott Ghostbusters thing was in effect, but it almost felt like
it almost felt like to it.
yeah like responding to all the haters and all the misogyny,
but
and all that. It was really weird.
It
like
was
and
weird,
I was like,
but also,
but I kind of appreciate it.
I mean, the reaction isn't so unexpected. I mean, a lot of this stuff is stuff that's been around for a long time.
Wait, how do you mean?
Like, the misogyny?
Oh, yeah, no, misogyny has always been a problem. No, yeah, I know. But it was just, it was almost strange because it was like, I can see how this was, like, part of their script, and then, like, it just became even more relevant once
yeah.
all the, like, fanboys and whatever started coming out of the woodwork. It was a very interesting experience to watch this, like, in January when it came out in July, and there was all this like hype and like not hype
yeah.
for it previously. Okay, you have any other things that you want to mention about that beginning with like, so tour guide and then us meeting Erin?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been quite so policed for what I'm wearing exactly, but I've definitely related to her so much. It was a great introduction mm-hmm. to her when she's, you know, she's in that room with all the pretentious intellectuals.
And, yeah, yeah.
And she's being introduced to her idol who is just not having it.
Oh, God, yeah.
That was painful, but so relatable.
Awkward, but very relatable, yeah. Because we've all been there. We've all been that person to be like, oh, like tripping all over yourself, trying to get something important done or impress someone. Yeah, yeah.
It was a great way to establish her and establish liking her. Like,
Yeah, I also liked her character. I just thought the characters were all, well, I mean, different characters got more, I mean, more character development than others, but I thought her character development was pretty good. I thought that was a pretty solid character arc. We clearly knew what her motivations were,
Yeah.
and I just like how she kind of grew and developed over the course of the film. Like,
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, I don't think Holtzman got as much character development, even though I love Kate McKinnon, there's just not really much development there.
No.
But Erin definitely got a lot of development. I liked Patty, but I don't know if she got really any development per se.
I wouldn't say that she got development in terms of like her character and her personality,
Right.
but I would say in terms of like her life, I would say maybe. Because
Maybe.
she
I
used to
mean,
work at a
she
job that she
was.
hated, and now
Well, she
she's.
was fairly. I mean, she was like, it was paid and stuff, but yeah, I guess she wasn't like super thrilled about it. Sure. And then I don't know, like, do you think Abby got development? Because I don't know if she got that. It was really more like Erin. It was
It
like more like
was
Erin's journey,
her
right?
story, I think, in a lot of ways.
Abby or Erin?
Erin, she
Erin,
was
right?
the
Yeah.
point of view character for a lot of the story. Though it was interesting
Right.
how that kind of began shifting. I don't know if,
Yeah.
like, once Patty was introduced and Erin became essentially competent in all the science stuff because she knows all of this stuff, Patty instead became the point of view character where, we don't, this is all make believe stuff. Like, no one knows this science stuff. But
Oh yeah, literally they're just talking mumbo jumbo like BS, and it's like we're just going with it because,
fun.
yeah.
But then, Patty became, we're watching through Patty because we don't know any of this stuff. She doesn't know any of this stuff.
Right.
She thinks it's super
Right.
weird. We think it's super weird. I liked how that was played though, because like you're switching like your point of view character, I'm
Yeah.
putting that in
'Cause
quotes. You can't see
I
that.
really liked Patty a lot. And
Did
I think
you?
that's to do with it. It's Well, like once we start shifting towards her
Yeah.
point of view, yeah, I think that's also part of it, right?
I love Leslie
Anyway.
Jones. I think she's hilarious.
Yeah, they're all like
They were
they
all.
all had their moments, you know?
Oh,
So
before I even
yeah.
watched this, I don't know, a few weeks ago, I somehow found myself in the dark part of the internet, or YouTube, where I was clicking and clicking and ended up watching a whole bunch of like bloopers from Ghostbusters.
Oh, bloopers, okay.
Yeah.
The new one?
Of the new one, yeah. And
Oh, send that to me, yeah.
it was essentially, I didn't realize Kate McKinnon did a lot of like improv stuff. Like she was just like throwing random lines out there a lot, and you could see all of, like tons of different, things that she was saying and
Yeah.
the cast's reaction.
Oh, yeah, I gotta see
It was
that. There was
great.
definitely at least one scene where I wrote down. This is probably improv because I was just like it had a different like feel to it from like the other scenes I had seen, but I'll get to that later. I said so that scene where Erin is sitting at her desk looking at the Amazon website with her
Yeah.
book on it. I said tabs, use tabs
That's
because this is
me at work.
me. Yeah,
I'm
just
kidding.
use
I'm
it. Why are
kidding.
you
Don't
covering it
listen,
up with a
boss.
black folder? Use a tab, lady. But then again, I have a problem. I have like so many tabs. When I work with like the people I work with, they look at my computer screen and they're like, "You have a
You do
problem." And
have a
I'm like,
problem.
"Listen, I know,
That's the
but
first step.
I just have this one computer." And let's
Most people have
see.
one computer. It's just about, opening things
Well,
and closing
yeah,
things
like
in
at
your
work, I'm like,
life.
listen, I'm not gonna like, I need these
Bookmark that
tabs up,
ish.
okay?
Okay, whatever. We're moving on.
Yeah, hold on. I'm trying to read. I wrote something on my in my notes, but I wrote it. I
Illegibly.
crammed it in between two other lines, so I made it small. It's hard to read.
I love how they kind
Think.
of. Oh, sorry. I thought you hadn't
Oh no, I'm
figured
just
it
trying to
out
read it.
yet.
No, yeah.
I
Go
love
on, go
how they
on.
brought the main cast together. It felt like the Avengers. I really.
Yeah, the team back together
I
again.
loved the way the Avengers did it. That was just brilliant. Joss Whedon is brilliant. But I felt like this really did that extremely well. It can be really. It's really easy for
With an
that to be
ensemble?
done
Yeah.
poorly. Because right. it just kind of feels like you're, oh, let's bring in all the people. And it feels very formulaic and just kind of like step by step, this is what you do. But in this case, it felt very natural. And
Yeah, I agree.
It would just...
And it, each moment... The storytelling was... Sorry.
No, just each character got like their moment to shine as soon as we got to know them. And so they became extremely endearing to us.
Yeah. The... Shoot, what was I going to say?
Sorry.
It's okay. I think, like you were saying, it was a very natural thing having everyone, like, come together. I don't know what I had a thought. It's gone now, so I'm going to move on. I'm very happy that they didn't give the delivery guy a horrible, like, stereotypical Desi accent, because I kind of prepared myself for it, and when it didn't happen, I was like, oh, I have some faith in America again. So that was really nice.
I loved the interactions with the delivery guy, though. I thought those were really funny. I don't know why I enjoyed them so much, but I think it was just so relatable.
Yeah. I was looking at some reviews, and some people were just not a fan of that whole delivery guy shtick thing, but, like, I thought it was fine.
I thought it was honestly. Funny, yeah.
Yeah. I love the costuming in this movie. I mean, especially towards the beginning. I was definitely taking a lot more notes in the beginning because it was all just, like, exposition getting everything set up before all the action comes in. Like Holtz... is her name Holtzman?
Holtzman, yeah.
Holtzman's glasses and, like, that crazy helmet that Abby's wearing in the beginning. And just, like... Oh, it was just... It was all so good. I was digging the costuming. And Woman in Science, man, like, that's so baller.
It really is.
I mean, like, it seems like it shouldn't be a revelation,
but it is
in 2016, 2017, but it is.
Yeah,
Woman in Science, and how they're just like constantly being like discredited throughout the whole film. But, you know, because this is like a happy you know, Hollywood film, the ending, they get that recognition that they deserve, right? But, like, you know.
If this was real life, they wouldn't get the recognition for 100 years, and they probably still wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, like... Didn't I just briefly mention Hidden Figures,
right, exactly.
like, a while back? Like, yeah. So...
I liked that running theme.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was played up a lot more in this as compared to the original. And I think that's a really... It was a really good choice because...
Well, I did hear that even the original had some, like, weird... Maybe not misogynistic, but, like, definitely not...
Yeah.
Definitely some problematic scenes and things in the original.
Basically.
So... such were the 80s.
Such were today, too.
Yeah, let's be real. We moved up a little bit, but not that far up.
Look at the White House, Maggie.
What?
Look at the White House, Maggie.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was just nice to see, okay, we have women in science. And, they make a point to go over, like scientific method, trying to get stuff done. I mean, yes, it's all fantasy, paranormal, whatever, fun movie stuff. But hey, like, yeah, they're getting discredited. And, like, this is definitely still a problem in today's world where women don't get the credit they deserve. A man, like, kind of, like, inserts himself into the narrative and suddenly gets all the credit. Like, I mean, like, even Kevin had that weird moment at the end where he's like, yeah, I'm one of the Ghostbusters. I did the thing. And they're all like, honey, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. Anyway. I was looking at the first ghost that we encounter, right?
Yes.
The woman in the dress who killed all her... Was it, like, killed all her father's servants and whatever?
I don't remember. It was some story like that.
And she's doing that thing, and I forgot to look up the trope, so I'm probably going to start typing in a little bit. But she's doing that thing where she tilts her head down and looks up with her eyes and looks, like, super evil and crazy. Yeah, that's a thing. Melissa's doing it right now at me.
I'm sorry you can't see it.
Yeah. But, like, she was doing the thing. I know it has a trope name because I've looked it up before. I just don't know what it is. But she was doing the thing, and I was like, oh, that can't be good. Yeah, that can't be good. And hopefully we cover Doctor Who next week, because one of the main characters in the episodes that I'm thinking about covering next week also does the head down, eyes up, evil glare thing, and it's great. I mean, like, there's no way anyone would ever paint a portrait of someone in that position the way that it's in the movie, but, like, it's all good. Okay, you're... Dude, the bags under your eyes are making this so much worse.
Whoa, I feel personally attacked right now. Just because I have it's a lot okay. of bags under my eyes. Okay, let me tell you one thing. I slept for literally 13 hours last night.
Oh, that's, like, the opposite of me. I have not been sleeping at all, like, today and, like, yesterday. Oh, my Lord.
I've been sleeping so much. It's ridiculous. I fell asleep at 6:38 at night.
That's crazy, dude. I was still in Boston at 6:30 last night. Oh, man.
I think it might be the meds I'm on, though, maybe. I honestly perhaps. Don't know. But yeah. Whatever.
I don't want to turn this into insomnia cast, but, like, I literally there, was dude. In bed early for me every day this, almost every day this week, and I still could not go to sleep.
That stinks.
Like, I was like, okay, Maggie, be in bed by 10:15 so you go to work tomorrow early and awake, but, like, could not fall asleep till midnight. But anyway, this ain't an insomnia cast, so I'm going to move on. And I'm going to look up that trope name. So okay. if you want to just give some more thoughts about, I guess, like, you could, if you want to talk about kind of, like, how women are portrayed in this, or any other kind of lingering thoughts you've had while I look up this trope?
Lingering thoughts.
Anything that comes to mind, honestly.
I think Kate McKinnon is a god among men. Or women, I guess. She is
like so, I said, national treasure.
She is so funny. And, like, she's hilarious on Saturday Night Live. And I've known that for a long time. And I really liked that, you know, Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy were closer to playing the straight men in this. Although they both had their funny moments, I think
right.
they were much more serious characters than Kate McKinnon.
They usually are.
And Leslie Jones. I think I liked that, you know, the characters of Abby and Aaron were able to kind of... They did get their own laughs, but they kind of sort of stepped back and let the quirky side characters get a lot of the really funny moments, which is why it feels like they, you know, Kate McKinnon and Leslie Jones shine so much, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, I think that was a great call because, like, the, you know, the friendship between them can be some of the emotional heart of the movie, but... It's not necessarily where we're going to be.
Is it bad that I was kind of tearing up when they had their friendship moment at the end? Like, aww. I got a little bit, like, I was a little touched.
Where were you touched? Okay. Show us on the doll.
I hate you. But no, I really did. I don't know. I thought it was touching. I can't find that trope.
Sorry.
It's not psychotic smirk, even though I clicked that. It's definitely not that. Sideways evil death smile? Glare. No.
I don't know.
Evil death glare, dude. I know.
Actually,
I mean...
kind of personally, I call that the Anakin Skywalker, but that's just me.
Okay, let me. It's funny because they do it on the Star Trek 2009 poster too. Like, even though Kirk is supposed to be a good guy, he does the like head down, eye up. Looking kind of devious kind of pose, and there's a name for it because I've looked
I'm
it
sure
up before.
I'm sure there is, Maggie.
It's bothering me, man. I have to find this trope. Oh my god. And I have to find it before we finish this podcast.
Maggie, let it go.
I know. You know me. I can't let things go. I have to find it out. Oh, man. Okay, so it's not Family of Blood. What was the other two-parter? Human Nature? Okay.
Human Nature,
it must
yeah.
be Human Nature. Okay, I'm gonna find this trope.
Okay, Maggie, just keep trying. I'll keep ghostbusting.
Anyway. Okay, back to this. I'll find it eventually. Let's see. So, you know how, again, thinking back to that ghost in the dress, the first one that we meet, I was thinking, oh, like, you know, every time we see, like, ghosts from the... This is just me. Having like silly thoughts, but
silly
like
thoughts,
you know how we always
Maggie.
See like old
silly thoughts with Maggie.
Yeah, but isn't that half the show? But
it's like three quarters of the show.
But you know how like she looks super elegant and beautiful, and it's like, oh, it's so old timey and stuff.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, what if we had a ghost from like today, like. At, like, What if we saw a ghost who wasn't, like, beautiful looking? Like a ghost in sweats or something. You know what I mean? Like, how ridiculous would that be? Like, would you take that as serious? A ghost in sweats?
Yeah, like, who's, you
super
know,
chill.
Yeah, just got back from Netflix and chill or whatever. Got run over by a car. Super PO'd about it. Oh, ghosts are dead, okay. Maggie. They had to have died.
That's true. But... sorry, it's like, it's really hard for me to concentrate on what you're saying and also read these trope names at the same time.
Okay. You know what I really like?
I can't find the trope name. Whatever. I'm going to let it go. If I do find it, it will be in the show notes. But whatever.
Did you like the CGI?
I thought it was fine. You know, it wasn't anything that, like, blew my mind away, but it was okay. What did you think?
I really liked it. Nothing that was, revelatory, certainly, but it integrated itself in the film well enough that I didn't actually think about it that much, which is exactly how it should be.
Right, right. I mean, like, I could kind of tell that it was supposed to be for, like, a 3D experience. But, like, even then, I don't know if I would have shelled out to see a 3D version of this.
I feel that.
Just because, you know, it didn't really add that much to the movie for me.
I never shell out for 3D. Unless, actually, yeah, I never, there's no unless. It's
I will show off for 3D for, like, Star Trek, and that's, like, pretty much it. Like, IMAX 3D for Star Trek, and that's really it. And I've been disappointed because, man, Into Darkness was a disappointment to me.
We know, Maggie.
And I was like, man, I should have seen the original one in 3D. That would have been nice. One day. I'm sure it'll be back. I mean, it's Star Trek. You can never kill it. Or at least... not in my lifetime.
Okay.
Anyway, okay, so we meet the villain, right?
Yes.
Who is Rowan. He's a creepy, sad, pathetic loner who was bullied as a child.
He felt like an internet troll.
Yeah, I mean, that's what kind of... I mean, isn't that how they were building him up? Like,
It just felt more poignant because of the crap that the Ghostbusters reboot has had to deal with.
Right. But yeah, I mean, he was saying, like, that great, when they first, like, when the gang all bust in on his, like, base of operations, and he's, like, talking about who the ghosts are, and he's like, they're mostly, like, guys or something. I was like,
yeah,
that's so real, though. Oh, it was so good. And I was just thinking, you know, like, it was really nice how they kind of compared and contrasted Abby and Erin to Rowan.
Because,
like, all three characters were, like, you know, bullied for being smart and having interests as, like, kids or whatever in school. But they kind of developed in different directions. So yeah. Rowan kind of was just, like, he went off into the deep, dark, evil end of things. I read a review recently that compared him to Syndrome, and I was like, you ain't wrong. Syndrome from Incredibles? I was like, yeah, you're right.
I watched The Incredibles really recently. It's my favorite Pixar movie, by the way. You just earned yourself a whole bunch of brownie points.
BT dubs. I can't remember which review that was from. I looked at Roger Ebert's website review, and I also looked at AV Club's review, so I can put that in the show notes. But yeah, one of them referred to him as, like, a Syndrome-esque kind of character, and I was like, yeah, that's accurate.
I thought of him kind of like a Severus Snape, but...
But, like, Severus actually has a sad story. Like, I'm not actually sad for this guy.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I liked how we have, you know, both these kind of... or there are three characters who are kind of... have similar-ish backgrounds.
Right.
But, you know, Rowan went to this deep, dark place.
And even, you know, Abby and Erin had different reactions. You know, Abby's like, F you, like, I can do whatever I want, and it doesn't matter what people think. And Erin's like, it matters so much what people think.
Right, right. But what I liked was, and they didn't, and I mean, obviously they did bring this up, like, personality-wise, I feel like Abby said something along those lines, like, oh, hey, like, we both face struggles and blah, blah, blah. But what got me was I liked the way their labs were, like, completely different. So Abby's lab is the first lab that we see, and it's very bright, colorful, airy. And then even when they move into that new space up above the Chinese restaurant, it's a very, like, colorful open space for their labs and experiments or whatever. But Rowan's lab is like very poorly lit and cramped and like scary looking and not welcoming at all. So like I just like that kind of dichotomy. It just worked really well for me. Yeah, I don't know. I thought whoever was doing sets and location scouting, like, A+, man, A+. I also liked how he broke the fourth wall.
Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah, because he looked so, like, straight into the camera. And I'm like, yes.
It's so...
Because, like, sometimes it doesn't work, especially when they do it too much, but, like, I liked it.
No, I thought it really worked, because it makes, like, the audience feel kind of unnerved. And so, yeah. Like, it made me feel unnerved, and it achieved its purpose that way. Obviously, I didn't want him to do it all the time, but it worked.
Right. And he had that thing where he was looking into mirrors, into ghosts, yeah. So, like, maybe we're the ghosts. Ooh,
Whoa, you
sorry.
Just blew my mind.
Y'all anyway, yeah, I thought, like, that one moment of breaking the fourth wall was really nice. I started noticing that the colors red and green were being utilized a lot, which was like a nice contrast, because generally we see a lot of, in movies, I feel like we see a lot of blues versus orange in terms of lighting schemes and colors and junk. Like, look at Pacific Rim. That whole film is like black, white, gray, blue, and orange. Like,
true that.
No joke. But yeah, this film used a lot of greens and reds, which was interesting. Because, you know, like, the ghosts have that greenish color, the ectoplasm is green. The Ghostbusters are in a space where, like, because it's like a Chinese restaurant, there's a lot of red decor. Their outfits have some red, the hearse has some red on it, the logo has red. Rowan's wearing a red uniform. I mean, it was hard for me to pinpoint any particular symbolism with any particular color.
Right.
Because, like, I know they're... What are those things called? Like, the laser gun ray things they have for ghost busting? I'm sure they're called something. But whatever. Those had a... those let out, like, a jet of, like, what, red? Red light or something like that? And those red lights were directed at the green ghosts and things like that. There's a lot of, like, just a lot of red versus green happening throughout the film. Like, even people's outfits, sometimes people were wearing green. A lot of green or wearing a lot of red. So sorry, I know that sounds really broad, but did you catch on to that color stuff, Melissa?
I never catch on to color stuff. That's just not the way my brain works. So I'm going to take your word for it. I do trust you, but I would never notice something like that.
Yeah.
When you say red and green, all I think of is Christmas, and I don't think that's what they
right. Well, that's another reason why it's a weird choice, because generally when you're saying a red and green color combination, people are thinking Christmas. It wasn't like Christmassy or anything. It was just like, even when they're in that weird portal, and now that I'm thinking about it, it kind of reminded me a little bit about Pacific Rim and freaking Big Hero 6. Big Hero 6, am I right?
No, I didn't think of Big Hero 6. I thought of Pacific Rim, which is ridiculous because I've seen Big Hero 6 a bajillion times and I've seen Pacific Rim once. But,
and I also think Big Hero 6 is a little more relevant to, like, oh, let me save my friend from falling into the abyss.
Killing all of the, whatever they are. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't even remember the plot of Big Hero 6, if I'm honest with you.
Well, I don't remember the plot of Pacific Rim, so nothing is fair here, Maddie.
Oh, man. If you guys haven't checked out our Pacific Rim episode yet, you really should. We had a fun time with it. It's, like, in two parts, so make sure you listen to both.
Nice plug. Very nice.
Hey, I gotta do it when the moment arises. But yeah, there's a lot
Big
of red
Hero 6 on this show.
Ooh, that's a good one, man. I was thinking, like, man, I can't think of what movies to do, but, like, already Big Hero 6, and what was the other one I mentioned?
Oh no.
Well, I guess when you re-listen to this episode, you can write it down. Oh man, we are
Star
useless.
Trek.
We have Star Trek 2009. How did I forget that?
Yeah, how
Good
did
Lord.
You forget that, Maddie?
Good Lord.
That's your baby.
Okay, yeah. And my baby's all grown up and I've forgotten about him or her. So let me just write this down so I don't remember. So we should do Star Trek 2009 at some point. And we should do Big Hero 6 at some point. And then I think next week we're going to be doing Doctor Who, if all goes according to plan. And I have some other, there are some other shows that we found out release dates for them for 2017 that I want to mention at the end of this episode, but we will get to that.
We will get to that. Okay.
So, yeah.
What now?
Leslie/Patty. Sorry. I just think of her as Leslie. Love how Patty knows.
Sorry. That's what happens when I know the actor before I know their character.
Right. Like, they, I conflate their name and their character's name, and it's really bad because they're not the same person. But I love how Patty knows her New York City history.
That was
like,
really
I like
good.
How she's, because, like, I guess there was a lot of, so not from the, I guess, Reddit side of, well, no, that's not accurate either. So, you know, like, people were complaining about, oh, we don't want a remake with women and blah, blah, blah. But there's also the flip side of that where people were like, on the more liberal side of the spectrum, I guess, we're like, oh, here we go. Yet another black woman who doesn't have, you know, education or isn't in science and blah, right?
Right, so she's the only main character who is a non-scientist who doesn't know what's going on and is a sassy black woman, you know?
Right. But I don't know if I buy that or agree with that after seeing this film, because I thought she was very knowledgeable. She was a competent character. She, you know, she got them the vehicle that they needed to get around the city. I think, and I think this film does kind of tear down or kind of attack all this, like, elitism and, like, oh, academia, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
From the very beginning, right, we see, like, okay, like, so she wants to get tenure, so Erin wants to get tenure at Columbia, but, like, at what cost? And is it really worth it? Because we're all a bunch of snobs. In this fictional universe, I don't think people at Columbia are all like that. But yeah, like, in for the purposes of this story, yeah, they were, like, complete jerks.
They were like how I imagine Harvard to be. Honestly.
Well, yeah, Columbia and Harvard are both Ivies.
No, I know, but I don't know. I think Columbia is a less pretentious version of Harvard. I don't know if that's just based on the people I know, but that's irrelevant.
I had a whole conversation with someone yesterday about, like, how I feel about Ivies or whatever. But in any case, yeah, I thought this film didn't really, I don't think this film treated Patty as lesser.
Yes, I completely agree.
Number one, we have no idea what her educational background is. So screw all those people who are like, oh, blah, 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 like, Patty's not educated. Screw them. And then two, like, she, yeah, competent, knowledgeable.
She's an important part of the team
and helps
out.
Yeah, important member of the team. I don't think she was a token character. I don't think she was, like, a stereotype. I think she was just her. So I didn't really feel negatively towards Patty. And I think, in fact, once you see this film, I think it, you know, the whole fact that they're kind of, like, you know, this film doesn't look favorably upon, like, Columbia University. Or, like, the Ivies being like, oh, well, ghost hunting is not, like, something that we like to endorse and blah, blah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like this film was, all, like, was very anti that. Like, I'm just trying to figure out how to put my thoughts into, like, coherent. Like, into a more coherent sentences,
yeah.
But do you see what I'm
no,
getting
I
at? Like,
I agree.
I think it kind of knocks down this whole, like, oh, academia is the most important thing, and, like, I think, in fact, it's kind of the opposite. Like, even though we have no idea what Patty's education is, but it doesn't matter, because she's still a smart, intelligent, like, competent woman.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think, you know, it's not, no one, none of the characters, none of the, like, especially none of the main female leads are ever giving her crap for, like, not being a scientist.
Yeah.
So.
No, absolutely. None of them think of her as less, and it doesn't encourage the audience to either. She's just a member of the team, and as soon as she becomes a member of the team, it's no one questions her place there, and she certainly proves her worth, I mean, in terms of plot necessity, in terms of her providing the car, and knowing stuff about New York. But also in terms of, you know, the laughs, I think she gets some of the best laughs, honestly. And
Yeah.
I just...
I mean...
No, I get what you're getting at, that, you know, it definitely, it tries to tear down some of the lofty positive feelings that people often conflate with prestigious
institutions and things like that.
Basically.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a whole thing that ties in with, like, your education level and your class.
Yeah.
Like, in real life. So, like, I'm not going to be like, oh, whatever. But anyway, to move on, other things I liked about Leslie was, sorry, Patty. God. This is like Wolfgang Max all over again, I swear. It's like, I like how she kind of mentioned, I mean, this is maybe a critique, but, you know, she does mention to the other woman when they're in the subway hunting down that ghost, or not hunting down, excuse me, trying to capture the ghost. It was kind of like how, like, she kind of needs her job, and I was like, oh, it would have been kind of nice to see that side of things, because we saw how, like, you know, Erin really wanted her job, but then she lost it, and how much that sucked, and, like, I guess maybe it wasn't as much of a hardship for Patty, but, like, I still feel like, a woman of color needing a job to support herself, that's kind of real. But I also was, like, thinking, and again, this is not just something that happens to Patty, this is something that happens to the other characters, too, but, like, having a white male artist be a complete jerk to a woman of color, I was like, uh-huh, I see you.
That moment felt that, very, like, real.
That felt very real. And, like, again, throughout this whole film, we see kind of men being jerks to women. Just, like,
yeah, definitely.
It wasn't, like, so... And it was, like, realistic, too. It wasn't, like, so over-the-top, dramatic villain. Like these are situations that happen in real life.
Yeah. I think...
And it was
my favorite
nice to see that
example
represented,
of
yeah.
this is the dichotomy between the mayor and... I think it's the mayor's assistant, whoever... Cecily Strong plays, who's also an SNL person, who I think is also very funny. But, you know, in private, Cecily Strong is like, yeah, the mayor is super behind you, thanks for all your service, blah blah blah, and then the in public it's all coming from the mayor and he's like, boo. And it was, where was I going with this? Oh god.
Well, Cecily Strong plays, the character's name is Jennifer Lynch, but I don't think we ever really get her name. She's just like the mayor's assistant or something like that.
But like it felt that way, I guess. The reason I'm bringing it up is because, like, it's the two of them have the same voice. The two of them, the mayor and the mayor's assistant or whoever she's playing, the two of them are speaking the same language, essentially, right? But she, Cecily Strong's character, is saying what they legitimately feel, and he is saying what the, you know, the press wants to hear. But in this case, it's basically saying she is being nice to them, and he is not.
Right. I don't know. Did I mention this in... Let me look through my notes. I wonder if I mentioned this in here. Nope. I'll mention it now. I know it's a time-honored trope, but I always love the whole weird paranormal crap goes down at a metal concert and everyone thinks it was part of the show. Like,
that is a good one.
That trope is so, it's like they use it all the time, but it has a special place in my heart for some reason.
Some tropes are just like that, like you see them a million times and they still just hit you right in the same place. Like,
dude, that was in Witch. I know you read Witch.
Yes.
Yeah, they use that trope in Witch, and they also, I remember I love Gravity Falls, and they subverted the trope in Gravity Falls. Because they have, like, a paranormal, whatever, crazy thing happen during a play. And at the end, one of the characters is like, oh, maybe they'll all think that it was part of the show and everything will be fine. And then the audience is like, boo, and they all just leave. And it was just so good. I think that episode was... I can't remember the name. I'm going to look up the name, but I highly recommend that episode of Gravity Falls. It's very, very good. I just know it's like, it was like some kind of, they put on like a puppet show or something like that. Puppet show.
I like how, I liked that they were in the attic of the Chinese restaurant. I thought that was a really cool place to be. And the fact that they went to the firehouse that is like the original Ghostbusters, like,
oh, is that what that was? See, I'm so like, I don't know anything.
and she's like, it's $21,000 a month to rent it. I was like,
lol, so true though.
New York, man.
Yeah. So I looked up the name of the Gravity Falls episode. I think we can try to throw it into the show notes as well. But it is called Sock Opera.
Nice.
And what season is this? Because if it's from season two, then I would say, what season is this? I have no idea what season this is. Oh, well. Lol. I recommend Sock Opera. Good episode from Gravity Falls. Before I got cut off, I think you were saying that the old firehouse is where the original Ghostbusters took place.
Yeah, that was
Totally did not get that at all. But
and then, you know, they ended up there by the end.
Right. Because they got enough money or whatever to move in. I was hoping that they would get a new hearse or hearse car or whatever they're called for Patty's uncle.
Yeah.
With that cash, but, well, I guess we have to see that character at some point do its cameo. Or that actor do his cameo. Let's see. So the whole thing, I said, was V-neck improv. So I think that scene when they're talking about, well, yeah, we never do figure out what that guy's relationship to Erin is, right?
Yeah.
Which is interesting. We never find out if he's a boyfriend or something else.
Yeah, I didn't.
It's just implied that Abby has met this guy before. But that's an interesting choice, isn't it? Sorry, I just thought it's interesting because generally, but I think that's a really cool way of subverting, like, we are defining women by their relationships to men, right? Like,
yes.
Seeing women as girlfriends or wives or sisters or mothers or whatever. But it's interesting that they made it ambiguous.
I like it.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with it, though. I was curious as I was watching because I kept expecting them to kind of just explicitly say it. Yeah, but
to do some kind of reveal. But I thought they were talking about, you know, it's like Patty and Abby are talking and they're talking about that guy.
Yeah.
And did we ever get his name?
I have no idea.
Okay. But they're talking about the guy that Erin's talking to. And I think Melissa McCarthy says something like, he has a V-neck under that V-neck or something like that. And then, you know, they're just doing like weird, like, and then like, Patty's just doing a weird dance. It's just like, I am so sure that was improv. Like, that felt very, like, just the energy of that just felt very different to me than, like, the more scripted stuff. So, I don't know. Any moments that you thought were improv that I didn't pick up on?
There were, like, a lot of, like, random lines that just felt like, because I had seen Kate McKinnon just kind of throw all these lines out there, there are moments where I'm like, oh, I bet this is just, like, some random moment. I don't understand how they don't, like, burst out laughing, though, because, like, I would.
Yeah.
But I guess they're actors.
What's his face? Wasn't Jimmy Kimmel really bad with that kind of stuff?
Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, Jimmy Fallon. One of those. I know it was Jimmy something. Sorry. Yeah, Jimmy Fallon, right? Wasn't he the one who always laughs on SNL?
Yeah.
He's
one of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote SNL cast !! Because once I saw Cecily Strong, I was like, oh, it's a whole SNL party up in here.
I
didn't realize how many of... What?
I like when they do that.
Yeah, I didn't even realize how many of the male characters were also SNL cast members. Or previous SNL cast members. Like, there were a couple, I think.
There definitely were, but I can't think of any.
Dang.
Burn.
I love how when they're doing... You know how they have the characters watching TV from time to time? I like how they had the channel on Fox that one time. I think the very last time they're watching TV and the second last time they're watching TV, it's tuned to Fox. And I was like,
I don't know what you're implying, Maggie.
That Fox may or may not be an unreliable source. Let's see. My other notes, I'm kind of getting to the end of my notes, but I loved how every scene in the movie is daytime except for the very end.
That
when it rapidly transitions, it rapidly transitions to quote unquote night, even though I don't know if it really was nighttime, but you know, the sky darkens and the ghosts are everywhere. It looks like it's the middle of the night. And that was great because I think that the whole mood of like, oh, something's going down, there's evil, you know, being unleashed. Yeah, I mean, like, seriously though, like, evil is afoot. And I think that having it be like, I think the conscious choice of having all the scenes be daytime and then having only that, like, that the most dramatic part be at night was like really effective, you know?
No, I agree. I didn't even notice, but like, it's definitely something I subconsciously picked up on because it made it, make it feel,
it's more dramatic. It's more, yeah.
I loved the turnaround between, you know, catching Rowan, you know, supposedly dies, right? And everyone's like, yay, the day is saved. And you obviously know the day is not saved because there's still,
because the movie's not over. Right, there's still more runtime. Like,
it's not saved yet, okay? movies are so strange. But
that's what we all watch though. Like, we all know the runtime is affects how things are gonna go. It's like, I know when I'm watching Law and Order, if they're like, we crack the code in like the first, how long are the Law and Order episodes? Are they like 45 minutes? Like, yeah, they're 45, right?
Yeah, something like that.
But with commercials, they run for an hour. So it's like the 30-minute mark or the 25-minute mark, and they're like, we cracked the code, we solved the case, it's done. You know it ain't done. It ain't done. So, it's the same thing with this, right? Like, oh, yay, the day is saved. But is it?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And
also, sorry.
No, I liked how, like, Rowan did die. Like,
that dude's dead.
That was, like, I did not expect that. I did not expect him to be dead, but I guess it makes sense.
I mean, he came back, though.
No, I mean, he was...
like, not super graphic or anything.
No, but, like, he was dead. Like, he came back as a ghost, but, like, he's deceased.
Right.
I don't know. I didn't expect that. Maybe that's
because, what, you thought this was going to be more, like, family-friendly or something? Mm-hmm. You thought this would be, like, more family-friendly?
Not family-friendly. I just feel like... It felt weird for a villain to transition from human to not human in the course of a movie.
I see. I mean, but we've seen that before, right? Like, people turn into evil vampires, right? And stuff like that during movies, so...
Evil vampires. As opposed to nice vampires.
I don't know,
vampires.
Just as an example. What?
As opposed to nice vampires.
Well, there are some... Like, Mitchell's a nice vampire, sort of, right? Being human, Mitchell?
Yeah, I knew who you meant.
I don't know if I call him nice, but you know.
Being human.
Anyway. I wrote down Chekhov Swiss Army knife because that's definitely what it was.
It was a great throwback. What was I watching recently? I can't remember. Never mind. It was an Asian drama.
Oh, okay.
But the point is, I love when movies introduce something, or even TV shows, they introduce something, you know it's going to be relevant, you know it's going to be important, but you can't think about everything at the same time, and so they wait long enough that you have forgotten about it, because you just can't think about everything at the same time, and it's not your fault, because you knew it'd be important, but you just can't, you can't keep all of them in your head at the same time, you just can't.
Right. Yeah. It was funny because of what you're talking about with the whole, like, switching from different points of view. I was thinking, like, dang, we have not seen Eren's character in quite some time. And then she came back and I was like, oh yeah, hi, you're back now. One thing I liked about this film was, like, how it kind of did some, like, subversions for comedy effect.
Yeah.
Or for comedic effect. Like the whole, like, Eren runs to the mayor to talk to him. And, like, suddenly there's this ominous rumbling. And everyone's like, oh! And then it's just, like, a freaking garbage truck being rolled past the restaurant by two guys.
Great.
And then, like, earlier in the film where the tour guide's like, oh, that man's been dead for 15 years. And they're like, oh, we were talking to a ghost. And then he's like, oh, no, like, this guy's, like, so-and-so's son, you know, blah, 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 junior.
That was great.
It was just, like, it did it a couple times, and I was, like, every time I was, like, yes. Good choice.
You know, I found so funny was when Kristen Wiig, Aaron, is trying to open the windows. And the commentary makes it even better, where she's like, oh, that poor woman thinks those windows are doors. I just
And then, like, the kicker was like, oh, and she's supposed to be a scientist or something. I was like, dang.
Burn.
Savage.
But I think, you know, I watched Bridesmaids, and I think that's a funny movie. But I think Kristen Wiig plays, like, that manic character. Like, normal, but
also
awkward
character. Yeah.
Like,
adorable but manic, you said?
I don't know what I said.
It was just something you said like 2 seconds ago.
I literally just forgot. Whatever.
Oh, Lord.
Relatable, okay. Maybe? Whatever.
Hashtag relatable.
Hashtag so relatable. You know, a relatable character, but she is also, like, on the edge of crazy.
Yes. That's what you mean by manic?
Yeah not that. Like, bipolar manic.
Right, right. Two other notes I had, or three other notes I had, I guess.
There's no third thing.
Meh. I don't even know what that's referring to.
Monty
Python.
Spanish Inquisition.
Okay. The groin shot when all four women are like blasting that huge monster ghost thing that Rowan has become. And they, like, blast him in the groin. And then I was like, oh, okay. But then, like, I don't know if it was ruined when Leslie was like, or when Patty was like, were you supposed to aim there? Like, I don't know if that made the joke worse or better.
I liked it. Because they never, like, said, like, oh, aim for that part. And so, like, right. It was just like, I don't know, they all just did it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I said, aw, Holt, because, like, at the end when she was, like, giving her speech about, like, family and stuff, I was like, no, my heart! Don't make me feel things. Everybody felt too many things in the past 48 hours.
No more feels.
No more feels. But, yeah, I was like, we don't really get any backstory on her, and that would be kind of nice if we did, but, yeah, I don't know. I guess I could see her, all her craziness kind of stemming from, like, she doesn't really have a family, and it's like, oh my gosh, she found her people, yay!
Yeah, which was nice. It was nice. You know what I really liked was, after Rowan dies, like, he still interacts with the main cast, you know, by possessing them. I really liked, like, it was funny when he was possessing Melissa McCarthy, and she has that confrontation in the bathroom, and that's nasty and gross and whatever, but when he's possessing Chris Hemsworth, it is hysterical.
Oh my god, it was great. And it was nice, because I mean, as funny as Chris was being like a dumb, like, bimbo basically, like, in the beginning, like, it was so much it was nice to see him be like an intelligent evil. Like, I wrote down Loki moment.
Oh yeah,
he had his Loki moment, like, with the whole making all the cops and SWAT team dance and all that.
That
junk.
Was
just
so,
like,
funny.
It was so ridiculous, but I was just like, okay, like, it's nice to see Hemsworth being like this, because, like, when else is he ever gonna get a chance to play that kind of character?
Yeah, basically.
You know, it was just like, I was like, okay, this is great. I need more Hemsworth being possessed by, like, crazy syndrome-esque evil villain character. Like, it was just so good.
And I love how he was like, oh, I should have worked out more when I was alive. Oh, good.
It's like, it's too late. It's a little late. Chris Hemsworth was, I don't know, Kevin was such a ridiculous character. I don't even know what to think. I was just like, I was kind of like with Abby's character on him. I was like, dumb as a box of hair. Like, dude. What? Nothing. I think maybe it's supposed to be a take on, like, the whole, like the 1950s, you know, TV receptionists of old, but, like,
it definitely felt like an inverted trope. It didn't land as well as some of the others for me, honestly.
Right.
They took it really far for comedic value, but it kind of lost some of the inversion because you took it so far. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was a little, it was like, okay, like, how is this guy still alive?
But he did remind me, I was thinking of the characters that he reminded me of, and he kind of reminds me of Anna Faris's character in The House Bunny, and also, even more so, Brittany's character on Glee. Both of them are playing dumb blonde women. So, I mean, you know, and they are dumb as a post. I mean, like, they're all endearing and, like, they have the heart and whatever, but they are dumb as a post.
Yeah, Kevin's endearing, but it's like, bruh. But no.
I mean, it does say something that, you know, these are dumb blonde characters, but women.
I see. I love
the universe.
You love what?
I said the universe, but it was sarcastic.
Oh. Okay. I mean... Yeah, Kevin. I mean, and Kevin's whole interview scene and every. I'm with Wig on this one, or not with Wig. I'm with Aaron on this one. Like, he is so attractive, and he's so handsome. But like, I'm also with Abby being like, being that dumb kind of makes me go.
Ugh. It's definitely a turn like, off.
Let's not. I know I have more thoughts on this movie. I don't think they're coming to mind right now. I think the hunger's getting to me. I think the hunger's getting to you. Like,
call this the Hunger Games, honestly.
Happy Hunger Games, February 2017. But anyway, any other?
What's February 2017?
Oh God, is it February? I'm gonna say January. Jesus Holy Christ! Crap, January Maggie. 20. Someone stop me.
If I was nearby, I would.
Anyway, do you have any other further ideas or notes about Ghostbusters?
Well, I definitely do, but I definitely don't remember them. No,
I think we've both forgotten everything.
No, I'm actually kidding. I enjoyed it more than I expected to. Maybe because I had started, you know, the one from the 80s, and I just wasn't entertained. You know, like, back in the olden days, I didn't really think that much about representation.
Wait, what are the olden days to you?
I don't know, 15?
Like, before we did this podcast?
No, like, 10 years ago, maybe.
Okay.
Because it just always felt like they would have diversity kind of shoehorned in, and it felt like... the characters that they would add, like, oh, this is the black character, oh, this is the Asian character, they were, I thought that they were there only for diversity's sake, and so I wasn't...
Right, so, like, the token minority.
Right, exactly. The token character, right. And I think, you know, as I've gotten older, there's a few kind of angles that I've experienced from this. One is that I wasn't really... It wasn't that I wasn't a fan of diversity. It was more like I wasn't a fan of the poorly written character that's only there to bring diversity.
Yeah, like, no one wants, like, a horrible token character. Absolutely.
But it's kind of more than that. Like, I used to be really into game shows. Like, in elementary school, I would come home from elementary school and I would watch, I knew all of the shows that were on. Like,
oh, I was super into Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, I think.
You know, that was one that I never really got into.
That's the one I was the most into when I was at like 7 or something.
I would watch...
Also, I used to be into Fear Factor. Oh my god.
Don't even.
So bad.
I would watch Lingo, Russian Roulette, Weakest Link, Family Feud. And that was like the afternoon block on Game Show Network.
Family Feud is like lowest common denominator, yet... I still did watch it when I was a younger child, so, oh my god.
Yeah, it hits you in the good
Family
place.
Feud.
But I, but you know what, I'd also watch, Press Your Luck, Whammy, Match Game. I watched almost all of them. Okay. That's not the point. The point is that a lot of times these shows would have, you know, they would have three contestants, right? I'm thinking of specifically is Press Your Luck. And, you know, Press Your Luck is, I think, from the 70s. You know, a lot of times they'd show these older shows, you know, just reruns or whatever. And it would almost always be two men and one woman. That's just how it almost always was. And I would always root for the woman. I never made a choice to do this. I just saw myself in this woman and would... always root for her regardless of anything else.
Right.
I would never root for the others.
Because that's you. Right. That's the person up there who's most representing who you are.
Exactly. And
yeah,
representation is so important.
It is. It is. I mean, you know, thinking about Aziz Ansari's intro to last night's SNL.
We'll put a link episode, to it in the show notes.
Yes, we will link to it in show notes. But
he's doing this. I don't know why. I'm gesturing downward.
Yeah, you're motioning to the ground as if you're on like a YouTube video.
Yeah,
or
where
something.
I'm like
you're doing
pointing
the YouTube
down
thing.
To the info box.
Oh God, the internet has ruined us all.
I know, right?
But in his speech he does, or not speech, but in his monologue he does say, you know, like how representation, you know, like, you know, people have preconceived notions of how, say, like, Muslims are because of how they are portrayed in the media. I mean, he says it in a lot more conversational, casual, opening way than I just said it, but essentially, yes, and I've read so many articles about that, right? Like, it's important to see, you know, if for me, it's important, I feel like it's important to see people of color in the media because, like, that's, like, these, like, be represented not as, like, these crazy caricatures who are, like, evil or scheming or whatever, but as like regular normal people. And like they've done studies where it's like people perceive TV characters to be like their friends.
Yeah.
So, you know, if all your friends, your whole friends are on TV are white, and all like the villains you see on TV are like, say, POC or whatever category of people, like, yeah, that's like that really does have an impact on how you view things. Especially when you don't have that access to, like, say you live in a very like white area, then you're not gonna like probably know too many POC in real life. So if your only exposure is through media like television, then or film, then, you know, it's like, and you know, if you live in an area that's very white, don't know that many POC, and then all the POC you see in the media are evil, well, like, duh, you're gonna have a negative perception of POC. Like,
yeah.
That's just basic, like, psychology 101 right there.
Yeah, basically.
So, yes.
I mean, in the context of this film, you know,
it's more like, it was very much about women,
it was
right?
I was really glad to see, like, the women scientists. I mean, I studied mathematics at college, and it was a predominantly...
Boop, boop.
What?
I said boop, boop.
Oh, yeah. It was a predominantly male class. Not, you know, there was, it's not that I was a, you know, tiny minority, but it, you know, it was definitely a, you know, dude-dominated field I was in.
Yeah. Representation is important. I mean, we can go into, like, all these talks and discussions about, like, oh, like, are there innate gender or whatever things when it comes to how our brains function and things like that. Let's not get into it right now, but yeah, like... There's that argument to be made, right? But
I mean, for some things, I suppose, but I doubt it is.
For something.
You know, works for math and science.
Wait, say again?
You know, for some things, you know.
Yeah.
But not really for math and science, in my experience, at least.
Yeah, yeah. I feel that. I mean, it's interesting thing about, like, academia. There's more, I think, women going to college nowadays than men.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird how, like, and I see it too in my work, like that weird gender gap thing. It's really strange. Anyway. Sorry, this has been, like, I feel like we keep getting into, like, deep, heavy topics and being, like, really sad about things.
I enjoyed this.
But, it was a light, fun movie, but there were lots of thought-provoking things happening in it.
Yeah, and especially, like, the way that people reacted to it, obviously. I mean...
Absolutely.
You know, we didn't...
That was a huge thing. I don't think people would really be talking about Ghostbusters that much for, like, if the gender flip wasn't such a huge thing in most people's eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean... Like... There's... When people change something about, like, some original character, I mean, that's a whole nother discussion. But these are new characters, a new world, and it's not like they said, oh, you know, this character is this character, but a woman now. Like, these are new characters with...
Right.
You know, it shouldn't have been a big deal, but it was.
But it was, and these are the times that we live in.
Interesting times.
Yay! Anyway, let's talk about what's coming up next on our show. Because I think, unless you have more notes about Ghostbusters. So yeah, I liked it. I would recommend seeing it. I mean, it's probably discounted somewhere. I'm sure you can find it, y'all.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, so next week we'll be covering Doctor Who, two-parter. So I think that two-parter is going to be season... TV Tropes sucks. They listed it as season 29. Season Martha's in. Season 3 of the new Doctor Who, episode 8 and episode 9. So that's the human nature and family of blood two-part episode. We will cover that next week.
About people who've never seen Doctor Who before?
Oh, yeah. People who've never seen Doctor Who before. I guess we can give it a quick recap about what the show is generally about in the beginning of our next episode.
Sounds good.
Does that sound good to you?
Sounds good to me.
Because
My point is essentially that you can start off anywhere and you'll be fine, probably.
Yeah, yeah. So even though we're doing this two-parter that takes place in, like, the middle of a season, like, it doesn't really...
It's okay.
You don't need to see an older episode or, like, it's fine. I mean, I picked this particular two-parter because... It does feature a POC lead in it. And this is one of the more critically acclaimed episodes of that season, I think.
Probably.
It deals with race and other things like that. So yeah, we're going to be doing Doctor Who next week. Not the whole show, just that two-episode, two-parter. And then, yeah, please submit, you know, any ideas that you have for stuff that we should cover. You can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can send stuff to our Facebook, Twitter, or Tumblr. And just to go over a couple 2017 show dates. So, Into the Badlands is coming back.
I'm so excited. I'm really scared.
I know. Really it's coming back. So let's see. What is the date that it is coming back? Season 2 of Into the Badlands is slated to premiere on... Why won't this tell me the date? I know I Facebook messaged you the date, but I'm trying to find it on Google and Google's not telling me. Google's not a lying crap head. It's fine. I just have to go through my Facebook messages to you. Let's see. When is Badlands coming back? Oh my god, we chatted so much the other day. Where is it?
Regardless.
So Badlands is coming back in the spring.
March 19th.
You found it?
On Wikipedia.
On Wikipedia? Of course, it's on Wikipedia. Dang it. Okay. Into the Badlands is coming back on March 19th, so we're going to start covering it then. Funnily enough, I think our very first episode came out March 20th or something.
Ooh.
Of last year. So it's all full circle, man. Badlands, one year later.
If it happened in a movie or something, it would be too much. Like, it would be too on the nose.
Well, it is, I mean, it is the day before our anniversary.
Whatever.
Of the show.
Whatever. We're not going to...
So, yeah, 1 year later, we'll be covering Badlands yet again.
I'm so excited. And nervous.
But, hold up. What day is the 19th of March? Because I try to release our episodes on Sunday, so...
Whatever, we can figure this out later.
But yeah, just in time for our 1 year anniversary, more or less. So Badlands is coming back in March, and then Sense8 is coming back. I think we mentioned when it was coming back in May or something.
I think
so. So we should be able to hash out a schedule. But again, please send in stuff that you'd be interested in us covering. Also, please give us, if you love our show, give us 5 stars on iTunes so more people can learn about our show.
If you like the show, you can also give us 5 stars. That's fine too.
Yeah, but, you know, the more ratings and reviews we get on iTunes, the better. More people get exposed to the show. They can learn about how we feel about various topics, such as Into the Badlands. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
I think so.
And we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.